Thank you so much for all your wonderful energy. I myself need to be healed, and that was very healing tonight. My question is, first off, I'd like, you've probably noticed this already, that a Rutter's cameraman was killed by our troops. Now, they've lost 17 journalists since March the 20th. These people have been out there trying to tell the truth to the world, and our soldiers are killing them. Now, this gentleman is an award-winning Reuters cameraman, and he told his brother before he went out, he told, the brother says, that Mazin told me by phone a few days before his death that he discovered a mass grave dug by U.S. troops to conceal the bodies of their fellow comrades killed in Iraqi resistance attacks. He also told me that he found U.S. troops covered in plastic bags in remote desert areas, and he filmed them for a TV program. He was pretty sure that the American forces had killed Mazin knowingly to prevent him from airing the findings. When he was killed, he had on all of the orange regalia, and they knew he was a cameraman. And on his camera was pictures of the tank as it came at him to shoot him. When they took his body away, they finally gave it back to his family. They admitted responsibility for killing this man. Now, my question is to you, how do, today, in fact, on the radio, they say there's about 6,000 of our troops have been killed, and that there's supposedly about 40 to 60,000 Iraqis that have been killed. Now, my question is, how will the American public know, also there's a lot of maimed and wounded soldiers being held in Germany out of the public eye. So there's a lot of people that are being killed, our soldiers as well as Iraqis. When will we know the true amount of deaths that our tax money is paying for these people to be killed on both sides? When were we going to know the truth?
Well, we won't know the truth, because even when Bush is gone, it's really hard to go back and retrace this. And I'm glad you brought up the issue of Mazin's death, who was somebody that was well-loved within the international journalist community, and brought up the deaths of journalists in general, because I want to bring up another point, which is the hypocrisy of the United States around the media in Iraq. They say that, look, now we have opened it up, and people for the first time can hear all kinds of different media voices, and yet one of the first decrees was to say the media couldn't publish anything that incited people against the occupying forces. And that has been interpreted by the U.S. occupying forces. They've closed down a TV station in Mosul. They've closed down a newspaper called The Independent. And most recently, very disturbingly, the puppet regime, the governing coalition, the council, has said that it will suspend Al Jazeera and Al Arabiya, the two largest TV networks in Iraq right now. One of the things that you find that is positive after the U.S. invasion is that Iraqis now have access to satellite dishes, and they want those satellite dishes because they want to see what the world has to say. They don't believe the state television. It used to be run by Saddam Hussein. They didn't believe it. It's run now by the U.S. forces. They still don't believe it. And so their access to the world is through the satellite TV. The fact that they are contemplating now kicking out Al Jazeera and Al Arabiya is a terrible, terrible shame, and we must protest against that. Thank you.
Thank you for coming and speaking with us tonight, Medea. I finished a book recently titled The Party's Over, Oil, War, and Its Effect on Industrial Societies. And after reading the book, I was really became aware of the whole reality of what they term peak oil, which means that we're now at the point of the maximum output and production of oil, at which point in time it's going to start to decline. And this whole war seems to be part of the manifestation of peak oil, like they're trying to corner the world's oil supply, which then enables them to take control of the entire world, because whoever controls oil controls all the industrial societies. But what became clear to me is that when we do run out of oil, and if we haven't prepared for that outcome, which is like 20 years from now, we're going to descend into a state of chaos and total fractionization of all of our societies because we're dependent on oil. And the question I have for you is, how best can we address that? It seems that only alternative energy like wind and solar and those things really need to be ramped up and developed so that when we do eventually run out of oil in the next two decades, we'll have something to make a transition into and continue or maintain some standard of living so we don't drop into chaos. What do you think of that, of pushing alternative energy and stuff?
Yeah, you're totally right. And, you know, we still haven't even seen how the energy policy was developed in this country because they won't even release the information about who Cheney was meeting with. But, of course, we know who he's meeting with, the oil companies. And we certainly have to have a more emphasis on renewable sources of energy. I think one of the positive things, place like Santa Cruz, is also issue around public transportation, around bicycles, around alternative forms of transportation. We at Global Exchange have a campaign around the car companies. We are saying to the automobile companies that we are demanding as consumers that they give us cars that get 50 miles a gallon. That why is it that the cars they're selling today are getting less than the Model T Ford? So we have information out there on the table about the campaign we are doing around the car companies and hope that you will join us on that.
You've said it all, Medea. It's just I'm a Vietnam veteran. And I'm a Vietnam veteran. My name is John Brandon. I think the audience would be surprised to hear that how many veterans are speaking out against their commander-in-chief. Are there any veterans here tonight? We're pissed. We're mad. We're upset. We hope and pray groups like yourself, groups like ours, the United Veterans Council, meets in this very building tomorrow at 7:30, public invited, great, 3 minutes each. Let them know you're with them. And we're hoping that this all works for 2004, and we're rid of this monster.
Great. Well, thank you for the work that you're doing with the veteran community.
I'm afraid of what's going to happen if it doesn't work, folks. If we can't do it, there is patriot blood ready to be spilled, and I don't want to see that happen. Please vote him out.
Thank you.
I'm happy you got this picture up because I believe this is his double. It was all his dummy. And I think George W. Bush is still Bob Dole's baby. And Bob Dole and him and his overrides, his push and his with the arms sales have betrayed the Iraqi people to the point where Bush is saying, this guy from the UN, the Iraq guy, yesterday, he said, this guy is not my friend anymore. This guy from Iraq is saying, well, he's making it up, because this man from Iraq is making it up and saying, well, they're a friend of the Iraqi people. But no, they betrayed the Iraqi people with arms sales, the whole Arab nation. And now you made it clear to me that the Iraqi people weren't looters. I think they're more savagers. You know, I think you know that the corporations now are looting it out.
Right.
And I wanted to ask you about have you heard any talk about the Medina division, because they were told, they were saying, reporting, they were the most fierce, and I figure it was a racist to take them out. That they were probably a race close to the Native American, you know, just, I don't know, whether they had beer bellies or, I think they were.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I wonder, since we got a lot of people waiting, maybe we could hear a couple of questions and then I'll wrap up and answer if we could, go on, thank you.
Yeah, my name's Peter O'Reilly and I'm a delegate with the Santa Clara Central Labor Council, and I'm trying to get, it was great that we got an impeachment resolution before the Santa Cruz City Council, but we need a lot of help. If you know people over in Santa Clara, there's approximately 110,000 union members, and there's hundreds of thousands of people that hate Bush We need to organize that. And there's one phone number. It's 408-266-3790. It's the South Bay Labor Council. Call them up and encourage them to support an impeach Bush movement in Santa Clara County. That's to pressure the Santa Clara Central Labor Council, the union movement, in order to pressure the San Jose City Council and the Santa Clara County Board of Supervisors. It can be done. We need your help, and I would like to know, my question to you is, what can you do to help us out to get this movement started and to fruition in Santa Clara County? Thank you. It's 408-266-3790, South Bay Labor Council. 408-266-3790. If you want to talk to me afterwards, I'll be here for a little while. Thank you.
Terrific. Well, thank you. The only thing I can do is support your great organizing work, so thanks for what you're doing, and it's wonderful to see what started in Santa Cruz spread.
Hi, I have a question. I wonder if you could comment on the role of the United Nations. And the reason I say that is because I don't trust the United Nations much more than I trust the U.S. Chirac yesterday in his speech, I'm one of the people who did hear Chirac, said that naturally if the United Nations takes control, the country with the largest number of troops will be the one in charge, okay? The UN authorized the inspection regime. The UN didn't really stand up to the United States. What can we do to get the United Nations to act right in Iraq? And the second part of that question is, Iraq has a constitution. Iraq has could easily have a reconstituted police force, as you pointed. In fact, you gave me a lot of hope tonight. Why can't we just hold elections, pack up, get out, leave them the weapons they need to defend themselves and go home?
Sounds good to me. You bring up a really critical issue, and the United Nations does not have a very good reputation in Iraq, mostly because it oversaw the 13 years of sanctions. And then while the Security Council did not give in to the U.S., participate with the U.S. in the invasion, it did, after the fact, do something that was very wrong, and that is welcome the Governing Council members appointed by the United States as if they were legitimate leaders of Iraq. And that is one of the reasons, unfortunately, that the United Nations, I think, was attacked. I was in the gallery of the United Nations the day that that Governing Council came in, and I had seen Sergio de Mello, the person who was the United Nations representative who was killed in Iraq. We met with him in Iraq. I saw him in front of the United Nations, Kofi Annan, the world community say that we should welcome this Governing Council as a legitimate force in the transition to democracy. And I couldn't believe I heard him say it, because I knew he didn't think that was true. And that this is a council that is not legitimate inside Iraq. So, you know me, I got up, started yelling, Sergio, you can't believe that. That will just destroy the legitimacy of the United Nations in the eyes of the Iraqi people and the eyes of the world community. That's a terrible thing to do. Don't do it. And we got carted out. And lo and behold, you know, they went ahead and welcomed that puppet government that the U.S. appointed. So the United Nations has not been acting well. The United Nations has not been standing up to the United States. And the United Nations now has to do what Kofi Annan is finally saying, and finally just said in his speech yesterday. It has to come together as a world community and stop the illegal use of force. And he was finally referring to the U.S. invasion of Iraq in the terms that he should have done a long time ago, the illegal use of force. So, look, what else do we have? We have the United Nations, and that's all we have until we build some alternative institution or until we're able to democratize it. And the only positive thing I see is that the world community is a lot of other countries are better at pressuring their representatives than we are at pressuring our representatives in the United Nations, which is why we saw France and Germany and Mexico and Chile and Turkey not go along with the United States in the war. So we've got to recognize that as flawed an institution as it is, it's the only one there, and we have to work with our friends in the global community to strengthen their hand in the United Nations to stand up to the United States.
I have three quick questions.
Maybe we could pare it down, and if people could get their questions to real precise and come on and maybe say them one after another, and I'll wrap up.
You say that there's three women on the council, but it's my understanding that there's only one on the council, so I wonder.
Come closer, please.
It's my understanding that there's only one woman on the council, and I would like to know if you could clarify that and how she was chosen. And two, I would like to know is, you said you spend a lot of time with the troops. Are they aware that George Bush cut their benefits, their veteran benefits, when they left? And the last question is, who's doing arms inspections here in the United States?
I just wanted to ask if you can comment on how easy it is for you to travel to Iraq. The second question is there any movement to file criminal charges against Bush and the administration?
Movement to what?
Is there any movement to file criminal charges against Bush and the administration?
I was really glad you brought up a correlation with Cuba and Guantanamo Bay, and I was thinking about the fact that sanctions often increase efficiency and creativity within that country in forming infrastructure that's sovereign, and I was wondering if you have connections with people in Cuba just because they remain to be a sovereign state that's so close to U.S. shores, and also what you see the future of that country being because it's sort of fallen out of the spotlight.
Got a couple of questions from the lunatic fringe here in Santa Cruz. I'm a regular listener of Art Bell's Coast to Coast AM show. Talks about UFOs, the paranormal, and all that kind of stuff. One of the rumors that came in from a caller who was involved with the military before the invasion was that the reason we were going into Iraq was not just because of the oil, but that there was stories going around about that Saddam had possibly gotten his hands on some advanced technology, possibly from a crashed UFO, and that was the real reason why we were going over there. That's one. And the other question was, which is confirmed by the administration saying that they're using this next generation of weapons. I've read on the internet about one account of these advanced weapons being like a possibly microwave beam energy, and the story was that this strange-looking tank appeared, started shooting at cars, and fired out this thing that looked kind of like it was throwing out lightning bolts and reduced a bus within minutes to a molten metal, kind of like a wet rag. So I was just wondering if you had heard any of the really bizarre, far-out stories or any sort of evidence along those lines.
Thank you.
Yes, good evening. My name is Jeremy. I'm a member of the Schools Not Jails Coalition in the Bay Area. I just relocated here in Santa Cruz. And we primarily focus on incorporating ethnic studies in our public schools here in California and nationwide. But also what surprised me in listening to you, Ms. Benjamin, was that the Iraqi youth were talking about getting rid of the military in the public schools. And we also work with getting rid of the military and the police within public schools in the Bay Area. My question specifically is, are there any opportunities for youth and active college students to take part in Occupation Watch and its endeavors and activities to actually go to Iraq? Because I strongly believe that just like in Vietnam, the youth movement and the student movement can be a powerful force in sending an opposing voice to the powers that be in the United States and throughout the world. So.
Hi. You had talked about the potential coalition of military families and the troops that you spoke to while you were at the memorial and on the street, and their impression that what Bush is doing with the administration and why they're there is getting very transparent to them. So what I'm wondering is, how do you have any sense that the U.S. troops that are there in Iraq and going through this mind click of what's happening, is there any kind of sense that we're going to have a movement of them going AWOL or a conscientious objection in en masse?
Thanks.
Hello, my name is David, and this came about a half hour late, and unfortunately the only time I'd ever heard of you on the internet was referred to as a gatekeeper for the left, especially in regard to September 11th, so I was really impressed by what you spoke tonight. So my question to you is, it seems like that this whole administration's policies were based on September 11th, and there's a lot of information pointing to the cover-up of September 11th as the foundation for this new preemptive militaristic approach they have. My question is, what is your opinion about all the stories that are pointing to the Bush administration as orchestrating and allowing September 11th to happen in order for this current policy to unfold? Thank you.
I really want to thank you tonight for being here, and I know that you've done a lot of work with against the FCC deregulation of the cross-ownership rules, and it's really important right now for people to email and put pressure on our elected officials, and Medea Benjamin is also going to be in Wisconsin in November with the FCC, and I know that your work with that is very important, and I know that Bush's support comes a lot from the media manipulation and that that Code Pink, along with your all of this that you're doing. It's just great. I mean, how many fronts are you fighting this war on? Everywhere. But yeah.
Just like all of you.
Yeah, get on moveon.org, get on Reclaim the Media. It's really important. The next 2 weeks are really important here in the Senate and the House.
Great.
I missed a couple questions, so I hope nobody asked this one. But when you were talking about the soldiers who were very unhappy about being there, I was wondering, do they not have any opportunities to just sit down or escape or, I don't know. I don't really know anything about the military or being in the Army. So,
thanks.
Hi. I want to thank you for truly being inspirational, especially when it comes to women, both here and in Iraq, the way you've spoken tonight, Medea. Thank you. But I also want to say something for the middle-class people here, not just in Santa Cruz, although with housing you can see it here easily, but in this country, who are being pushed out in a similar fashion because of a kind of economic tyranny and being usurped. Whole families, three-generation families becoming homeless. Things the Red Cross can't even deal with all of their worldwideness. Can you put out a couple suggestions about what people who don't have money and don't have roofs and don't have computers can do to be a part of this movement to reclaim peace on the planet? Thanks.
Thanks. Wonderful questions. I'll try to quickly go through the ones that I can answer. The first one about women, there are three women on the council, not one. One is a woman who spent most of her life in exile in Europe. The other is a woman who is a medical doctor who was pretty much unknown to people in Iraq. And the third, a woman called Akila Hashimi, was a high-ranking member of Saddam Hussein's party and represented the Iraqi government at the UN under the Foreign Minister Tariq Aziz. Very strange. She was recently targeted by snipers, and she's now in critical condition. The issue about Bush cutting the benefits, this did create quite an uproar, and he had to roll back a lot of the plans to cut back those benefits, and it does show that when issues start getting out and military families start speaking up, we can force some changes in the administration's policies. The issue of arms inspections is a fantastic issue, And while Bush is going in front of the United Nations to talk about the threat of weapons of mass destruction without acknowledging that this country has 10,000 nuclear weapons, largest stockpiles of chemical and biological weapons, and is the only country in the world that has ever used all three weapons of mass destruction, it's the height of hypocrisy. We have worked with some groups overseas to start doing weapons inspections in the United States and hope to be able to continue that and give it more high profile. Easy to travel to Iraq. It's amazingly easy to travel to Iraq. And all you need is a passport. You don't need a visa. You don't need a picture. You don't need anything but your passport. And while it is a dangerous place, it's the most interesting place in the world to be right now. If I didn't have a family and obligations at home, I would be living in Iraq right now. And I encourage anybody who has the possibility of going to go, to do fundraisers, to raise the money, to get yourself there. We need help at the Occupation Watch Center. We need help of people who just have basic research skills, who can do some writing, who can help our Iraqi friends when they write English and it's not all that good English and needs to be refined. We need people to work with taking testimonies from families. We have translators. We need people there. And it is a risk to take, but I think it's a risk well worth taking. And I encourage anybody who wants to go or who knows anybody who might want to go to contact us at Global Exchange about the possibilities. That brings me to your question about youth. We need young people there. We are talking to a group of young people about taking a youth delegation to Iraq, which I am very committed to doing. And if you or somebody you know thinks that it would be logical to go with a delegation of this military families, I would be most interested in talking to you about it because I think your message is a very profound one and it would really resonate with the Iraqi youth. Of course, there's a lot of things to do here at home, and the main work here at home, as you well know, is organizing around young people to get them involved in this political work and get them to understand that their future is being jeopardized by an administration that is spending our money and our credibility overseas by invading countries that haven't invaded us. The issue of criminal charges against George Bush. You know, there are groups in the U.S. who are looking into that, but there are groups overseas that are doing tribunals against the United States, and the first one is going to be in Turkey, where they are really determined to have a people's tribunal. And there are several other countries around the world that are determined to also have a people's tribunal. There's one that's going to take place in Japan. There's one that's going to take place in Europe. Now, these are unfortunately things that the U.S. public will never hear about, but they are places that where they will bring people to testify from Iraq, where they will produce documentation, and where the rest of the world will get to hear about the crimes of the U.S. occupying forces. There was a question about Cuba and its relationship as about being a country that was under sanctions. And it is true that under sanctions, the creativity of the human spirit does come out. It's the one silver lining of these sanctions. And having spent a lot of time in Cuba myself, I saw tremendous similarities in Iraq, where people are the best mechanics in Iraq, just like they are in Cuba, keep their cars going with just, you know, tape, where they can fix anything, where things aren't thrown away, where it's not a throwaway consumer society. It's a reuse, recycle, reinvent. So yes, there is a lot in common. I have no idea what the future will hold for Cuba, but just as in Iraq, I think I am optimistic because I see how smart and creative and sophisticated and loving the Cuban people are, just like the people of Iraq are. And there's another people that have a lot in common with Iraq, and that's the Palestinians. having endured a much longer and very brutal occupation in Palestine. And going from Iraq to Palestine was very eye-opening, and I realized how important it is to get Palestinians to Iraq. Palestinians have a long history relationship with Iraq because Saddam Hussein was one of the only people in the entire Middle East that actually gave scholarships to Palestinians to go and study in Iraqi universities. And so you find all kinds of Palestinian engineers and doctors and educated people who say that they got their degrees in Iraq and that they left their hearts in Iraq because they love the Iraqi people and they want to go now and help do something. So through Occupation Watch, we're trying to arrange ways for Palestinians and go to work with Iraqis in educating Iraqis about occupation and about what the Palestinians did right and did wrong in resisting occupation and how to build a strong nonviolent movement against occupation. There was a question about UFOs. I'm sorry, I really don't know the answer to that, but there are so many rumors in Iraq about the kind of weapons that you talked about, the lightning bolt that just disintegrates buses. They talk about this stuff all the time. People just disintegrating, can't find their remains of them at all. I have no idea how true it is, but it certainly is running through the rumor mills in Iraq. The issue about why don't more military folks just go AWOL? You know, it's very hard in a place like Iraq. Where do you go? There's no safe houses there. You can't just go across the border. The border is, I mean, if you're based in Baghdad, for example, you would have to travel 12 miles by land to get across to the Jordanian border, and then they'd arrest you there. They wouldn't let you in there. It's not very easy to escape. There's really very few places to escape to. Unless you were in Kuwait, for example, and you defected in Kuwait, and there are some troops that are doing that. There are some who have already gained conscientious objector status or in the process of trying to do that. There is a wonderful coalition of groups in this country that works with military folks. There's a GI hotline that's an 800 number for military people to call. We were trying to figure out ways that we could write that in graffiti in the, you know, around the streets of the cities of Iraq. To say, GIs, know your rights, and here's the 800 number to call. We have heard and haven't been able to confirm that the websites for the reaching the counseling groups have been blocked in Iraq so that the soldiers don't have access to those sites. I'm not sure it's true, but it probably is. So it's very, very difficult for them to defect, and I think many of them think, well, my life will be ruined, my career will be ruined. They look at people like Stephen Funk, who became a conscientious objector, and how difficult it's been for him. And it is a big, big risk for people to take, and I think so far it's being that people are defecting in small numbers. What is really the issue is that people are not joining the reserves anymore, and that's going to be a big issue for this government. The reserves are being depleted, and they're not going to be rejuvenated with new recruits.
The ugly ones are there, man.
What? Whether the Bush administration allowed 9/11 to happen, you probably know that there are a lot of groups who've been working on this, and the main problem is that there are constantly cover-ups with the investigations of 9/11, very, very suspicious cover-ups of why the Bush administration is so afraid to get the truth out about 9/11. And there are a number of very good websites like coverup.org, and anybody want to name some other ones? Voices in the Wilderness. Oh, fromthewilderness.com, that's right, another very good one. Right, Kissinger is the investigator. Luckily that he resigned because of conflict of interest. And then the last two questions, one was about the FCC. It wasn't really a question, but I think I'd like to reiterate how anything we can do to roll back the corporate giveaways that the FCC just did will be very, very important for the future of trying to build a real a media in this country that tells us the truth about what's going on in the world. And reiterate the importance of supporting community radio, community press, indie media centers, all of these alternative institutions that we've been building up. And And the last question about how can people who don't have a lot of money, don't have access to computers, middle-class people who've been so harmed by the Bush administration's policies, how can they get involved, I think is an absolutely key issue and a good one to close on. Because I don't know about the rest of you, but I find myself spending way too much time in front of the computer. In some ways, I think it is essential to have computers to allow us to do the kind of organizing we're doing, especially the global organizing that we're doing. But in another way, I think it really keeps us from doing the old-time, old-fashioned kind of organizing, which is door-to-door, neighbor-to-neighbor, PTA, at churches, at mosques, where people tend to congregate, at the grocery stores. And it really is the old-fashioned organizing that works the best. Because when you look around the world and you see who is doing the best organizing, it's not us here in the United States. It's not even the Christian Coalition in the United States. It's people in other countries, and it's often people in places like Brazil that manage to elect somebody from the working class to become the president of their country and really built a workers' party that incorporates all kinds of grassroots groups with the militant union movement that should be the kind of examples that we're looking towards. And when you look around the world at the places where people are actually not only protesting and organizing but gaining access to power, they really didn't do it by sitting 8 and 10 and 12 hours a day in front of our computers. So let me leave with the note of let's make sure that we get out, we do the old-fashioned organizing, we talk to our neighbors, we talk to our family members, we talk to our relatives, we talk to our coworkers, and remember that the essence of organizing and mobilizing is to really enjoy the socializing, the talking to each other, the respect of other human beings, to go out with a very positive attitude towards convincing people whose positions we might not agree with, and recognize that if we are going to change the world, we have to get back to the old-fashioned speaking out to people who might disagree with us and doing it in a very positive way that brings them to our side. Thank you. Yeah.